So this talk is Time Lord's Adventures Abusing Time on Linux Systems by Daniel Hensis. What happens when an attacker controls time on a Linux system? Well, we're here to find out both practically and see what bypassing does, what control does, and what can you expect in this kind of a fun scenario. Daniel Hintz is a cybersecurity specialist for 4 years, mostly developing and delivering technical training in many ranges of IT and cybersecurity, with now engaging and practicing in penetrating testing, red team projects, and organizing other CTF like Martin CTF. So thank you very much for this talk. There you go.
And thank you for intro. It's nice to see all of you here. You are survivors. This is the last day, and you are not standing in line for badges. You are here listening to this talk, so I will try to make worth of your time. So, shortly about me, Katrin already said some things, but my name is Daniel Hintzis. Main thing I do at the work is doing cybersecurity trainings, both for end users and as well technical specialists about cybersecurity. Also, I program stuff, make CTFs, and have formal education both in physics and in computer science. So, about what we will talk today. We will talk about how time works, how can we manipulate the time, what are the consequences, and see also some demos of practical impacts. And disclaimer, this is not deep technical talk. We will look at pretty basic things that I think everyone from auditoria could figure out yourself if you spend a week or 2 weeks reading Linux manuals and trying some things out. But I think that some of you at least might learn something new. So, to talk about time, we need to understand how time works. Does anyone in the auditorium have basic background in physics and knowledge about general and special relativity theory? Raise your hands if someone is. At least one, two, at least three, four people. But I'm just kidding. This talk will be about Linux time, not time in general. It would be a pretty interesting talk about relativity theories and why time for me is going slower if I walk while you are sitting, but maybe for the next event. So, how time works on Linux. There are three basic systems that are responsible about time. We have the hardware clock, sometimes called real-time clock or CMOS clock. We have the system clock and some network protocols or other time synchronization mechanisms. In this talk, we will concentrate specifically on a system clock and what does it do and how does it work. But we will also look into basics about hardware clock. So, what does it do? It stores persistent time. What does it mean? I will explain with a short story. When I was 14 years old, I had a really trashy laptop that every time when I did shut it down, and after I booted it up, it just forgot what year it is, what time it is, how much time is passed. I did look into that and figured out that apparently I need to change CMOS battery because when I powered it down, it just didn't count the time in the hardware clock that passes also when computers are shut down. At that moment, when I was 14, my mind was blown because I didn't even imagine that there are more than one just main battery in the laptop. From that time, I have learned a lot of different things, including that the hardware clock is responsible for this storing persistent time. So if the battery does not work for hardware clock, then our computer just don't understand that time passes when it's shut down. It's usually UTC, but sometimes you can set it up also to have some specific time zone. Then you receive warning by systems that it's not recommended. It's red at boot time, so every time we start our computer, this hardware clock is red. And it usually can also drift because it's not very precise. So how does it interact with the system clock? The system clock, on the other hand, as the name says, it's in a system, so it works only when the computer is running. When we start computer, it initializes from the hardware clock, it reads the hardware clock and takes that as a starting point. It's actually stored and it's stored both in RAM some parts and some parts in files. Usually we edit the when we edit the system clock, we edit the files, but there are also some parts that are hard to access. I will talk about that in the other part of the speech. And it's usually used by all processes. There are some processes that try to kind of use more like the network protocol times or sometimes even hardware clock. But usually all processes read the time by system clock. So what we can do with it? We can modify it, and usually it's also adjusted by NTPs, some network time protocol, or some other mechanisms. Because as we saw previously, the hardware clock drifts. If the system clock is initialized from the hardware clock, then the system clock also drifts, and we want precise time on our computer. So usually we use network time protocol or some other time synchronization mechanisms. There's also the 11-minute synchronization cycle between system clock and hardware clock. So if our system times gets updated by network time protocol, then our hardware clock also fixes the time drift. And it's core to whole all scheduling processes. So how can we modify the system time? Of course, the first step is to disable all network time protocols, hardware clock synchronizations, and any other time synchronization services we have, because we are talking this case in local time manipulation, or in other words, on our device. And if our device synchronizes the time with other systems, then our manipulations will just get resetted every synchronization cycle. So first step is to disable all synchronizations. Then there are different methods. The most I would say the least hacky one is to use the time and date utility with the GUI, cool, simple, and it's kind of hard to automate. So we can use the command line arguments, such as command line programs, such as time date CTL. It's a bit more hacky, but it still doesn't feel like a time abuse. You are using just the system program to change time. So there are people who have written libraries that actually can pass fake time to specific programs, if you say, and do some interesting runtime things. It's this library on the screen is dedicated to modify how specific programs see time. It has a lot of cool features, but at least in documentation, because I didn't really use it for this presentation, because I wanted to keep it simple and easy to understand, not so reading some complex libraries and what they are doing with syscalls and some other things. So the solution I chose is just using bash or bashing, automating the usual commands in a way how I want. For example, setting system time with very simple loops, or freezing it, or doing something else. So let's see two very simple demonstrations. So time freezing, and also we will look into local JavaScript timer workaround. Time freezing, of course, is pretty easy. I will just put up my virtual machine. Oh, it's already on that screen. Excellent. So on this upper window, we see the system clock running, and it shows the current system time. It's pretty incorrect, because this demo machine is already being abused for some time, and I didn't reset the time, so it synchronized again. It's just some other time. And on the other hand, we have terminal where there is just a bash script. After the presentation, all scripts are available in the GitHub. I will have the QR code in the last slide. So for those who want to check what basic commands I did use, it's possible to do that. And we see that the system clock, it's frozen. Actually, the script is just every second resetting time to the starting point. So it's nothing advanced, but at this moment, it gives us, it's a simple proof of concept. It gives us the opportunities to do some more interesting things about this all. And also maybe some more cool consequences about what we will talk later. I will stop this, and we see that the time keeps going from the point it was stopped. So now let's see about JavaScript rate limiting bypassing. This is a real type of vulnerability type I have seen in my pentesting career. We all as hackers know that you shouldn't ever trust anything that comes from the user browser because they might be lying. But still, there are some web coded applications that uses the end user time for measuring if the lockdown is over. For example, let's say that we are admin and we want to log in. This password is incorrect, and we see after 3 attempts I'm locked out. It's also showing me how much time is left on a lockout. But I can actually just fast forward the time. And right now, if I use correct password, we see I logged in. For the proof of concept, if I, for example, try to log in with the incorrect password and I fix it, it still does not allow me to log in, but after the time skip, it let me log in the right password. So very basic, but real vulnerability that I have seen in some systems. So let's go back to the slides in a second. So what I just demonstrated, the local JavaScript timer workaround. What we can learn from this? Of course, never trust the system time. You always use your server system time, not the end user system time. And if you have JavaScript, then just request time from server. No. Of course, there are other ways to work around just modifying JavaScript cookies and everything, not the cookies, the requests. But this is one way how to go around. Some other consequences that I didn't demonstrate, but are very real. So system time is used also by cron. So we can bypass some scheduled tasks, for example, some regular backups or some checks. If we just jump forward in a time, they will not execute. Or if we want to trigger them all the time, if those are resource-full tasks that take a lot of resources, then triggering these tasks all the time by modifying the schedule can also just break the system or denial of service type of attack. There's also some interesting consequences as we can bypass sudo session timeout. For example, we start sudo session and it's by default 10 minutes after we will need to write the sudo password next time. But if we just keep rewinding time back at the moment when the session was started, that the computer thinks, oh, the 10 minutes haven't yet passed, so we can all the time use sudo commands. As you saw in my virtual machine, I needed to write sudo almost every time because the cooldown is 20 seconds there because I wanted to try out some things and see if it can work. Also, the modern solutions as Kerberos, Active Directory login, so you request precise time when you are doing the login procedure. So if the system clock is incorrect and don't match the server you try to log in, then you actually can't log in. So it's it has potential impact as denial of service. Many licensing systems, especially the older ones, check the system time. For example, you start the 14-day trial, and after the 14 days, some systems don't request the server time. They just look in the computer, and if the 14 days haven't passed, you still have used the free software, so you can just provide time for the application or for the computer and keep using the unlicensed software. Multi-factor authentication, the TOTP codes are very precise. They usually stop working after like 30-second time interval, and if the system that is generating or submitting them have incorrect timestamps, also these codes don't work. You can try some reply attacks that you use old code that was, example, valid 5 minutes ago, try to reply it if the time is manipulated, but usually the all modern libraries are smart enough to not fall for this trick. Also, SSL TLS certification certificate validation issues. So when we open the website with SSL, it checks if the certificate time is still valid, and it checks often against our system time. We can manipulate the system time, and then the certification, which is already invalid, will be valid again. And of course, we can bypass some delays, as I just did show with the JavaScript delays. But there is a question. In the previous slide, there was an accent on some delays. Why I can't bypass them all? For example, when I started thinking about this talk, I wanted to check if I can bypass the KeePass XC rate limiting, because it's locally installed on my computer, it works without internet, so it checks the system time probably, and after I enter the password for my password manager 5 times wrong, it says it's on a cooldown, I can't enter password again. Can I bypass it? And I tried, and with the system clock manipulation, nothing happened. I couldn't bypass it. So I kept researching and did find that there is such a thing as monotonic clock. As it's written, it's non-settable system-wide clock. I wouldn't even call it a clock by standard meaning, because actually it's more like a counter that counts ticks from the system boot, and the value never decreases. It should always increase, but there are some rare cases when if you request this clock very quickly 2 times in a row, you can get the same value, but it never decreases. So that's actually the thing most programs use when they talk about some cooldowns, or for example, computer games calculating the trajectories of projectiles, they use this system clock. So, a little bit about that more. It always moves forward. It never rewinds. It's immune to time jumps, so by changing system clock, this clock will not change. It's used for intervals, not timestamps, as I already mentioned, so it's not really even a clock. It just counts ticks from system have booted, and it starts every time when you boot system. It's not directly observable from user space. And so that means that I can't directly interact with it, not even as a root user. Let's see what else uses it. System time is used by file timestamps, so file system use system time, some logs use system time, certificate checks, scheduled tasks, and some other programs. On the other hand, monotonic time is used by all the sleep, use sleep, nano sleep, every time. For example, in my scripts, I also say like reset time every 1 second. How does the script know that 1 second is passed if it would check by system time? It checks the monotonic time. That's how it knows that 1 second, 15 seconds, 20 seconds have passed. It also used in many systemd services, Watchdog. It's used in timers, Rust, Go, C++. Also some benchmarking libraries use it because in some intensive tests it's more precise than the system clock. Then the question is, can we manipulate the monotonic clock? How do you all think? Of course, it's Linux. We can do whatever we want. It's never a problem in Linux to manipulate. So the next question is actually how we can manipulate. We can do the kernel mode module patch because we just then rewrite that this system-wide non-settable clock is actually settable, readable, editable. It's a crafty work. We can use virtual machines and literally control how fast the processes are running in a virtual machine, intercepting some commands, slowing it down, making it faster. I tried to test that out, but in a short time frame I had, all what I got that my virtual machine just breaks completely. And the other way, which is the most mainstream way how to do that, is just syscall interception. The libfake time actually gives option to do this thing. It literally just intercepts the syscalls between the program and when it's asking the this monotonic clock to the kernel, it just intercepts and we can pass our own values there. But I didn't manage really to get it working. So, I think this presentation will be run way more faster than I anticipated, but you will have a little bit more free time. So this is one of my last slides already. So if you have questions, you can start prepare them. The next steps for this, my short research, I want to read and understand Linux kernel better because I did start reading it and analyzing for this presentation, but I did understand that I don't understand very many things. I want to try also to write my own patches to Linux kernel so I can control this monotonic clock, do some better automatization scripts, and also for future bigger research, look how time is managed in quantum computers, because in the quantum speeds there are many interesting things that actually happen. So here's the sources. Mostly I just read the manuals and experimented with commands and functions, trying them out. And here's the promised QR code for slides and also the bash scripts I used in the presentation. So do you have any questions?
So any questions? Raise hands and I'll give you the mic. If that's all, then thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Daniels. And again, small announcements like wash your hands, remember tear down. And if anything, you can probably still talk to him right on the side. But yeah, thank you all for coming.